It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Phil, how are you?
Morena, Rachel, I'm good, thank you very much.
Bit of a cold, wet one in Tamaki Makaurau today?
Yeah, it was a bit miserable. It wasn't as icy this morning as it has been. Some mornings I go out and I've just got to go back inside, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, get the hot water, put it over the windscreen, melt the ice.
Exactly.
But it was still cool.
Exactly. At least it wasn't quite that frosty. We've got a lot to get through this morning, but we do want to briefly touch on what happened at Ihumātau last night, because it changed quite a bit. There was a really increased police presence down there during the Whakamoemiti. And a lot of people have been calling the police tactics quite heavy-handed last night as well. What is the City Council doing to help de-escalate the situation at the moment and find a peaceful solution?
Well, for a start, we have no control operationally over police. There's a thing called constabulary independence, and it's there for a good reason. We don't tell the police what to do, but nor do I actually simply accept at face value that the police were set out to escalate the situation. Why would they? They've got no vested interest in that at all. In fact, I thought the reports that I'd been getting back is that the police had been behaving incredibly well. You know, you saw the picture in the paper of the police officer singing Whakaria Mai on the guitar, and, you know, nobody, well, I certainly don't want an escalation of it, and I don't think anybody, that any reasonable person wants an escalation in tensions. Why the police increased numbers, that's not something that I'm privy to. And then in response, obviously, there was a social media call that went out for more people to turn up there. And in the end, I think, you know, the thing was de-escalated without any serious problem arising. But, you know, what it highlights is that there is always the potential for tensions to exist. And what we want to do is we want to try to find a solution to the problem. And what we're doing at the moment very much is giving the initiative to Kingitanga. Kingitanga is respected by both the Mana Whenua mandated leadership that want the development, but also respected by the Soul people who don't want the development. And Waikato Tainui and Kingitanga in that sense are in a great position to be able to talk to both sides and to see if a solution that can be brokered that actually meets the bottom lines for both sides.
Now, is council in discussion with Kingitanga at the moment?
I'm regularly in discussion with Nanaia Mahuta, who's my link person in government. After the council resolution a fortnight ago, I was on the phone to the Prime Minister. We organised a meeting with Mana Whenua. Mana Whenua met at the airport a couple of weeks ago, worked out that they wanted an iwi-based solution to this. They didn't want the government to come in and impose a solution, nor council. And you know, I think it's important because the differing viewpoints are within Māoridom. The Mana Whenua leadership say we want the development. The Soul group say we don't want any development. And they've had both pretty rigid positions. Now, the King movement can come in and they can talk to both sides because they're respected by both sides, and they're ideally placed to see how we can move this forward to find a resolution.
I just want to talk about something you said a little bit earlier. Do you not think, Phil, that it is possibly seen as an escalation to bring so many police in last night, seemingly without there being much change in the context out of Ihumātau?
Well, you've got to ask the question, why did the police do that? And I'm sure they didn't do it because they simply wanted more police officers standing out in the cold in the middle of the night. So obviously there was something that they were advised about that they felt necessary to take that action. But I can't speak for them. They would have to speak for themselves on that.
All right. Well, we'll move on to talking about some of the other topics we've got this morning. So rates is one thing we're going to be speaking about. The Auckland Council's published a roundup of how rates were spent across the 2018-2019 year. A lot of money went into transport and wastewater, amongst a lot of other things. There is a really useful table that the council's put out so you can have a look at how the money gets spent, I guess. But I guess it doesn't really illustrate what's happening in a concrete sense around the city. What's been a project that's come out of this, the council rates spend in the last year, that you've been really satisfied with, Phil?
Yeah, well, for every $100 in rates, we spend $71 of the $100 go into transport, water, wastewater and stormwater and parks and community. And in all of those areas, there's been huge steps forward. Part of that, we spend about, if I'm looking at the current year, this year, 2019-20, so, you know, we're spending about $2.75 billion in capital spend, and the biggest part of that is in transport, and you see what's happening in transport all over the city. The Eastern Busway, the extension of the Northern Busway, the City Rail Link, cycleways, another 52 centimetres of cycleways and walkways going in, new roading. But a big amount of that is operating spend, because as more and more people use public transport, the cost of public transport goes up in terms of it being 50% subsidised, in terms of the fare return only produces half of the cost of the use of public transport. But to get up the 100 million passenger trips a year now, which is what we're up to, really makes a difference. You imagine if all of those people went back to using a car. Water and wastewater, really important. We're starting a huge capital project called the Central Interceptor that runs from Greyland right through to the Mangere Waste Treatment Station, and that will cut by 80-90% the wastewater overflows within the next decade, which is really important. We don't want our wastewater overflowing into the harbour every time it rains. Mm-hmm. Cleaning up the beaches, doing the investigative work, Takapuna Beach, for example, finding out where old pipes have broken, there's contamination of wastewater into stormwater, illegal connections, all of that sort of thing. Parks and community, just huge amounts of work that we're doing to upgrade our parks, to make them people-friendly, and the best example of that I can give you is out in Mount Roskill in the Wesley area at Owoanga, what we call Oakley Creek, where we've turned a concrete drain and a bit of empty grassland and a few weeping willow trees into 50,000 native trees planted, restored the natural stream, created a Māori kids playground, a Mara Hupara, created walk and cycle ways. The park is now buzzing with people. It's fantastic to look at. Yeah, so that's the sort of thing, that's where your rate money's going, and, you know, I can see some huge value coming out of those things.
That sounds fantastic, especially, you know, when you can see those directly coming into the community. That's brilliant way to see how your rates are going, I guess. We've talked a lot about how Auckland Council has declared a climate emergency. This is obviously going to be quite an expensive thing for Auckland to adapt to, the effects of climate change. How's this going to affect council rates in the future, and how are we going to have to adapt to this, Phil?
Yeah, well, I had an interesting meeting yesterday with a guy trying to work out the nuts and bolts. You know, we're probably generating 10 million tonnes of carbon emissions. We've got to cut that by 2030, probably by 6 million tonnes. And some of that is what council can do, you know, so we're looking at our buses, so we're moving towards electrification of buses, hydrogen buses. Some of it's on savings, conservation savings. We saved $5 million in using our power better last year and our water better. Mm. But much of that is going to come from the public, and that's where we've got to work with central government. For example, we need a third of our cars on the road by 2030 to be electric.
Do you think
if we're to hit that target of 1.5 degrees?
Do you think we'll have to ask for some more financial assistance? The council will have to ask for more financial assistance from the government to help adapt to this?
I think a lot of it's going to come out of government, and I welcome, you know, I know some people grizzled about the government's incentive scheme to put higher costs on high-emitting vehicles and to lower the cost of electric cars. In my opinion, it is absolutely the right thing to do. If we don't do that, we might as well give up on saying we're really taking climate change seriously and leave our kids and our grandkids a rotten legacy. So, yes, we have to do that, and that's where, I've been talking to the government recently about how they can help with the electrification of our buses, for example, and that's where I think that they can, extending that scheme, they can make a real difference.
Right.
And I'm hopeful that they will. Obviously, we can't do it on our own, but does Auckland have to play a role?
Yeah.
We're, you know, 35% of the country's population. Of course, we do.
Absolutely.
And you know, we put money into our long-term plan for both coastal management, because it's about adaptation as well as mitigation. Mm-hmm. We know sea levels are already rising, more severe weather events, and that means we put $90 million into the 10-year plan. Will we have to put more in the future? I have no doubt that we will, and next time we do our long-term plan, it'll be a close consultation with the public of Auckland to say, this is what we want to do, and this is how we think it can be best funded.
Fantastic. Well, that's great. We might move on to talking quickly about the hardship fund for businesses affected by the City Rail Link. That might be all we have time to talk about with this morning. You've proposed a hardship fund for businesses struggling to survive along the route of the $4.4 billion City Rail Link. It would be jointly funded between council and central government. Minister Phil Twyford's currently considering the proposal. He said that they're not going to consider cash payments, though. What would you like that hardship fund to look like?
Well, I have been in conversation with Phil Twyford, and I'm due another conversation with him today. This is not a compensation fund for anybody whose business has been disrupted by work on the roads. You know, if we were to do that, the government would be establishing a precedent that would cost them hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. But what I believe that we need to do is that there are some small businesses that are dramatically impacted, particularly by it taking longer on the Albert Street work than was anticipated. And I know of a couple of cases at least where people are suffering in a serious way. And what I'm not setting up to do is establish a precedent for compensation, but rather a hardship fund where we can help people that are in dire needs. Now, are we going to be helping out multinational owned hotels along the way? No. Are we going to be helping out anybody that's lost some money because there's some disruption? No. Can the landlords of those properties do more? Yes. They're going to make a fortune in their property value from having the City Rail Link right adjacent to their businesses. So they're going to capitalise on the profits of what we've invested from the ratepayer and the taxpayer. So the least that the landlords can do is to provide some rent relief to some of their businesses during the inevitable process of disruption while it's occurring.
Right.
So I'm not trying to take away their responsibility. I'm putting that right back on them. And nor am I saying to the businesses, hey, we can pick up every dollar that you lose. Look, some of those businesses are losing money because there's been three or four major buildings demolished that were providing clientele for their businesses. Now, you know, that's separate from the City Rail Link. And what I'm trying to do is to say to government, we can, through the City Rail Link Limited, let them establish a fund which can be managed independently to deal with the greatest cases of hardship. And, you know, the government's considering this, they're taking it seriously, but they know that there are big implications if this were to establish a precedent for compensation for everyone.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Phil. We really appreciate it, and we'll speak to you again next week.
Good as always, Rachel. Thank you very much
for your time. See you soon.
Cheers.
Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.